Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Heat Nation, welcome into Believe in Miami Heat. NBA Finals Game 4 reaction. Not a great one once again for the culture. Close game. Game 4. Lakers end up winning 102-96. And what can you say? Heat are down 3-1. It is sort of a crushing result when you look back to Game 3. No Bam, no Goron. Heat come out. Jimmy scores 40. One of the best games in NBA Finals history. And it just looks like the momentum has shifted. And as you know, I mentioned before last episode, it's strange to say, oh, down 2-1, but the momentum shifted to the Heat. But the way they won that game without Goron, without Bam, it really looked like it shifted. And the Heat had their chances in Game 4. 6 points. They only lost by 6. But now down 3-1. And it's hard to pinpoint, you know, really exact. The Heat played great defense. The Lakers played great defense. I've harped on here and on other shows about Jimmy Butler all year, really, but particularly in the playoffs and his not being aggressive to score. And I think at first glance, a lot of people are going to look at the box score and say, oh, Jimmy Butler only took 17 shots. He only finished with 22 points. That's your difference. And blame and put part of the blame on Jimmy. And look, of course, when your best player, you know, coming off of a 40-point game, he only has 22, he only takes 17 shots, you're going to say, oh, well, Jimmy didn't do it, and he wasn't. And normally, that would be exactly where I'd go first. That's where I would start, and I would crush him for not being aggressive. I'm not going to do that this time. I can't do that this time. Because I think Jimmy Butler was aggressive. I think he was looking to score. I think he was playing at a high level. But credit where credit's due. Frank Vogel took arguably the best defensive player in the NBA, Anthony Davis, and put him on Jimmy Butler. And all of those line drives and those straight line drives into the paint where Jimmy pivots and he gets those fadeaway jumpers or layups or any of those last game, it was tough. It was absolutely the toughest maybe that it's ever been for him. I mean, that is a just, especially the way the Lakers play, not allowing you to get into the paint in the first place. But now you're a player like Jimmy Butler and your main strength in your game is getting to the basket, getting to the foul line, getting into the paint. And now you got 9 feet of wingspan standing in front of you and 7 feet of unibrow. It's a daunting task to say, I'm going to go get 40 again. So you can blame Jimmy Butler if you want for not being aggressive enough. But if that's going to be one of the arguments, I disagree. I think Jimmy Butler was aggressive. I just think they had trouble adjusting to the fact that Anthony Davis guarded Jimmy Butler and did a great job. And to me, You know, if this series holds and this is the result, Lakers are up 3-1. The defense Anthony Davis played on Jimmy Butler coming off of the game, one of the best games in NBA history, makes him the finals MVP. I mean, you could knock what happened in game three. But LeBron hasn't played great. And the Lake and their numbers combined, they only combined for 50 points. So on the opposite end, the Heat did what you want to do to the Lakers. Anthony Davis, once again, I mean, he was 8 of 16, which is efficient, but 16 shots is not a lot for Anthony Davis. LeBron, 8 of 16, also efficient. But 16 shots is not a lot for LeBron James. And in the second half, LeBron was just chucking above the break threes. They were not allowing these guys to do what they normally do offensively. They only combined for 50 points. So when you look around and you say, all right, well, Jimmy Butler's not able to get his buckets. He's not able to get his shots. LeBron and AD unable to get their shots. So then what? Role players. Role players got to step up. And for the Heat, said it before, I'll say it again, Tyler Herro is going to be a star. He's an absolute stud. The kid has ice in his veins for 20 years old. He finished with 21. Which is great. Needed it. Big shots again in the second half. Didn't look great in the first half. Big shots in the second half. Bam Adebayo played. I'll get to Bam in a second. 13 points from the bench. Not good. Kelly Olynyk, 4 points. Only played 12 minutes. Kendrick Nunn, 2 for 11. Minutes at the beginning of the fourth quarter, you know, Duncan and Bam get in foul trouble, so Kelly Olynyk and Kendrick Nunn have to play at the beginning of the fourth quarter. Not great. Not a great situation to be in because Kendrick Nunn looked bad. 2 of 11. Iguodala, not expecting him to get a ton of points, but only 3 points. So 13 points between those three guys off the bench. Compared to 27 points from the Lakers bench. So look right there. That's your, I mean, and if you need to look any further for how much of an impact Goran Dragic had on this game, not having Goran Dragic has 13 to 27 in bench scoring is a big deal, but not just the bench. So, you know, the Heat bench only scored 13 points. Tyler Herro played well. Duncan Robinson, 17 points. So that's good. But major liability on defense. And because of that, got torched by Kentavious Caldwell-Pope multiple times. KCP finishes with 15. They get 25 points out of Danny Green and KCP. So, you know, even though the Heat's defense was great in their game plan to limit LeBron and AD and make the other guys beat you worked, I've brought it up before. I wonder when you get to the point where it's like, yeah, Duncan Robinson at 17. He also went to the line 6 times, which is rare. The Lakers have played such incredible defense on him. He was only able to take 7 shots. And while he was 3 for 6 from three and shot the ball better, like 5 fouls, guys are driving by him. In a defensive battle where every possession matters, it's not a high-scoring game in the first place. I get it, he stretches the floor, but in important minutes like that, do you go away from him? I don't know. I'm not Eric Spoelstra. I trust Eric Spoelstra, but you got to wonder in those minutes, just like, Is his ability to stretch the floor when he's not able to get shots worth his inability on the defensive end against this team? Because he's making Kentavious Caldwell-Pope look like a stud. Because he's been their third best player in this series. So it's a big question. But look, the Lakers role players offensively outplay the Heat's role players when it comes down to it. Particularly the bench. Because again, you know, Tyler and Duncan got their points. They scored. But 27-13 in bench scoring. It's a big deal when you're, you know, Jimmy's not getting his shots. Bam is coming back off an injury. Jay Crowder, 8 points, 2 of 7. He was bound to have a subpar shooting night. It happened. So there's got to be an answer there, right? Because if you want a chance to come back in this series, if you're going to shut down LeBron and AD, you probably got to – Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Danny Green combining for 25 is tough. I mean, I guess you live with them taking the shots still, and that becomes the difference. You know, one thing that I've considered also, it's just and I hate to even pose this as a possibility, but game 2 and game 3, the Heat scored 115 and 114 points, and the offense looked unstoppable. And a lot of the offense was Jimmy Butler guard-to-guard screens, or Jimmy Butler in screen, or Tyler Hero in screen roles with Kelly Olynyk or Myers Leonard, who are bigs who can shoot the ball. I just wonder, seeing how the Heat played in those two games, is this a bad offensive matchup to have Jimmy and Bam running pick and rolls with each other, or being in a two-man game when they're both limited to non-shooters, so that the Lakers are able to collapse the paint, pressure shooters more, double, put more, you know, it's just, you know, the idea that the Lakers felt comfortable moving Anthony Davis off of Bam Adebayo and putting him on Jimmy Butler is a little concerning. And so Bam comes back. He's initiating the offense a lot. I get it, because that's what he does. And this is not knocking Bam, because matchups make, you know, they say in fighting, matchups make fights. You saw 2 games in a row, Jimmy Butler was the guy initiating the offense, getting guys involved, and he almost had a triple-double. So it's not like he had a bad game, but, you know, I just wonder if insisting on Bam initiating offense at times took away from what Jimmy had done so well over the last 2 games. You know, and I mentioned Kelly Olynyk only playing 12 minutes after having 24 in game 2 and 17 in game 3. He's such a big part of the offensive success. Only takes 4 shots. You don't, I'm not saying you want to play Kelly Olynyk over Bam, but 33 minutes to 12 minutes after, you know, you won your first game of the series with Kelly Olynyk playing major minutes, maybe 20-20 in Bam's first game back. Because, like, to me, just having Bam back is an emotional boost for your team. So you don't necessarily have to play him all those minutes. And, you know, when you can make the argument defensively, they held him to, you know, 102 points. Yeah, well, in game 3, they held him to 104 points and they won. They scored 150. The Heat scored 115. So again, I'm not saying necessarily that Bam is the reason the offense was struggled, but the offense was definitely different tonight. And the difference is that Bam Adebayo was the difference, at least from a lineup perspective. Bam is there. And let me tell you something too, not to be overlooked, the Heat scored 98 in game 1. Game 4, 96. 2 games without Bam on the floor, 114, 115. Matchups make fights. What do you do next game? You don't go, I don't anticipate going away from Bam, and maybe I'm seeing something different, and I'm sure Eric Spoelstra, again, the genius, the Hall of Fame coach. He knows better than I do. But I just wonder if there's a correlation there. I've said in this series that I think for the Heat to win, they have to shoot more threes and they have to play faster. And it just seemed like even though they didn't shoot a ton of threes in the last in games two and three, they were playing faster. They were getting to the line, putting Jimmy out there with a bunch of shooters. It accentuated what he does best, which is getting to the line, getting to the paint, creating for others, getting buckets at the rim. I just wonder, do they need to go back to Kelly Olynyk and Myers Leonard a little more? Still play Bam. And I still contend that I think it happened for maybe like 2 minutes, but they played Kelly Olynyk and Bam together for a couple minutes. Why? You could do that too. If you need to, especially if Jay Crowder's not shooting the ball well. But just to me, you got Kelly Olynyk was such a big part of the last two games and then plays 12 minutes and only takes four shots. He's your spark plug off the bench. He's your spark plug off the bench right now. If Goran Dragic is not healthy, someone's got to be the spark plug off the bench. And Kendrick Nunn certainly wasn't that guy. So we'll see game five. Obviously, Goran Dragic, he warmed up for game four. And that was amazing. And in and of itself, if you heard yesterday his media availability, the guy was on the brink of tears. And just as a side note, he warmed up, and after he was done warming up, he was sitting out on the sideline with what looked like Chris Quinn and maybe a trainer. And I get it, reporters, you got to do your job and sort of document what you see. But there was a video floating around after he had made the decision that he wasn't going to play in game four, Goran Dragic. And he was getting emotional and he was tearing up. And it's so hard on this guy. So why, whoever's shooting this video on your camera phone or whatever, do you have to zoom all the way in on his face and just stay there while the guy is on the brink of tears? This grown man who's played in the NBA for 12 years, who's clearly taking this so hard, and post it. I love Goran Dragic, but he's clearly taking this. Yeah, you think he's taking it hard? Yeah, I think he's taking it hard. Do we have to like flaunt this video of this man near tears? I get it. Like, fans, you love his passion, but was there ever any doubt about his passion? I don't want to see a video of Goran Dragic crying before the game. Just the fact that he was out on the floor is good enough for me. Just the fact that he went out and tried to play with a torn plantar fascia that he said was completely popped a day after he was getting emotional in the media availability, you know that the guy, like, we know that he's emotional. Why do we have to blast this video of him almost crying before a game because he's not playing? I don't want to see that. I already feel like shit that he's not playing. It sucks. It sucks for him more than anybody. You think he wants a video out there of him crying before the game? Come on, we can do better than that. You can do better than that. But the positive that comes out of it is this. In my limited, extremely, extremely limited medical knowledge, just the fact that he warmed up meant he must have felt pretty good today. Because the other thing he said in his media availability, Goran, was that the trainers have told him constantly that it's a day-to-day thing, that one day he could be in excruciating pain and the next day he could feel great. So he must have woken up today and felt good enough to at least try. And game five is not till Friday. So you got to feel good about potentially having Goran back, which even if he's not completely healthy, bench scoring's at a premium right now. And you got to assume that the Lakers are going to go back to Anthony Davis guarding Jimmy Butler. So you need another guy who can penetrate and score. And he was the leading scorer, obviously, throughout the playoffs. So anything you can do right now, because 3-1. It's 3-1. I'm not ready to say it's over. I'm not. You look at the Western Conference playoffs, the Nuggets, you know, they came back from 3-1 twice. We've seen LeBron James come back from 3-1 against, I mean, arguably the best team in NBA history. And listen, the Lakers are good, but they're not the Warriors. They're just not. The blueprint, Miami has figured out a blueprint defensively to shut these guys down, to limit this team. Like, again, if you hold the Lakers to 102 points, you should win the game. You should win. Now, something's got to give offensively. Getting Goran back, maybe that's the difference. But I'm not ready to just totally say it's over. Anything can happen. Adjustments will be made. They have to figure out a way to get Duncan Robinson more shots. 3-for-6 from three tonight. It looked like he was gonna be one of those nights where he went off. He had 17. It's good. He needs more shots. They got to figure it out. Probably need to play Kelly Olynyk a little more. And maybe get Goran back. And look, held the Lakers 102 points. Lakers just played a little bit better defense. A little bit better. You had your shots. There was a puncher's chance in game four to win and pull it within 2-2. I've said it before. No moral victories. There's no moral victories. That's clear. But I still think it's possible. And if there's a coach and a player that I believe have a chance to make that happen, Eric Spoelstra and Jimmy Butler. So we'll see. So game five, Friday night. So I will be back with you recapping, and hopefully it's a good recap and we're still alive. And there's more basketball to be played. I think the story is yet to be written on these finals. So we'll see you on Friday. And, you know, come on. If you're listening by now, you know.
Heat Nation. I love you.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug, but I ended up connecting to the world around me, a world where each sunset was painted, where I felt adventures pulse with every step, and where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, you'll want to invite everyone over, from book club to the fantasy league, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick scented oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.